Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to this week's Dracena Wines Podcast. We are still in Villeneuve talking about my favorite grape variety. Today, you'll be listening to Jimena Pacheco, winemaker and owner of Pulso Wines in Chile. I was intrigued to hear about the wine region and, of course, how Cabernet Franc is expressed there. Plus, we got to taste her wines. Grab a glass or a bottle of Cab Franc and enjoy. And afterwards, please leave us a review so we know what you're thinking. Let us know what you'd like to hear from us. Thanks. Sláinte.
We do have some questions about the wines. Maybe we'll do them at the end, because we're trying to make up the time now. But let's move on to Chile. Jimena Pacheco is the winemaker of Pulso Wines. She consults a number of people. I think some of you in the room may know by now she has a little history here in Chile.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to be back in this beautiful area that I've been for quite a while now. 10 years ago, so it's really exciting to see you all again and taste all the wines again. So today I'm gonna tell you a little bit about Chile. So before I actually go into Cabernet Franc in Chile and the wines, I kind of wanted to tell you a little bit about the country, because I'm sure that many of you are not that familiar with it. So in order to have a big perspective of what's going on in the country, and then we can go to the wines and really understand the main differences between them. So, well, it's a treasure of diversity, and this is exactly what I want to show. First, where are we located? Southern hemisphere, between the parallels 17 and 56. A few facts about the country. Well, first of all, that it's very long and very skinny. So it's about 4,500 kilometers long. And then in terms of how wide it is, there's between 400 kilometers and 90 kilometers. So it's very small and full of mountains all over the place. So the place to produce wine is actually very, it's in between the mountains, and it's in a very specific location. So, as you see, it's not a big country. We're about 17 million. Most of those live in Santiago, in the city, in the capital. And then, I kind of want to make a little bit of history, because unlike you, we don't have native varieties in Chile, so most of the varieties were introduced at some point, you know. So, if we see here, 1500s, Santiago was founded, and then one of the earliest vineyards was established by a Spaniard, Diego de Cáceres, in the Central Valley. Then we move forward to the 19th century, our independence as a country in 1818, and then in the mid 1800s, many of the well-known wineries were founded, such as Conchitoro, Bolsignor Macul, Errázuriz, the biggest ones. And at the end of the century, also there were a lot of wine varieties that were introduced into the country, especially from France. So that's where all the Bordeaux style varieties are coming from. Finally, if we go to the 20th century, we see a couple of things. In the 60s and 70s, a few land reforms were made for land. Then the more modern history of winemaking starts around the 80s, with all the introduction of stainless steel tanks and more modern techniques of winemaking. Very important in 82, where Casablanca was developed as the new cool climate region, which actually gave a twist into the whole winemaking. Then the 90s, all the exports started, and that's how we arrived to today. We're actually in 2017. Well, today was the fourth largest exporter of wine to the world. In 2017, it's a concerning value. It's about $2 billion. And in terms of liters, it's like 900 liters, 3 million liters in total. Then I want to talk a little bit about what's going on in the country right now. As you can see here, the main issue, I would say, about Chile is the crazy geography that we have. So this is important because Chile is pretty much very isolated, and the reasons are, you know, the Atacama Desert, the driest desert in the world, which is our kind of northern limit. Then we have the Andes Mountains on the east, the Pacific Ocean on the west, and then if you go south, you'll find Patagonia and all the ice fields. So that means that as a country, we're kind of an island. We're very protected against diseases and pests. So that's why, for example, we don't have phylloxera. So it's one of the, we keep protecting the country from everything that can actually contaminate. So in terms of winemaking, well, the industry was dominated by big companies, and still is. But lately, we've had this new movement of very small producers doing more like terroir wines, and that's very interesting because they're pushing for the barriers and also planting new things and new wines and more suitable wines depending on the soils, on the climate. So it's a big difference. Also, the other thing that's going on, it's they are rediscovering very old vineyards that we had kind of forgotten somewhere in the south. So they are identifying the varieties that we had there, and we're discovering really interesting things. So now there's kind of another movement like Carignan, like 100-year-old vines that are producing beautiful wines in the southern part. Okay, so this is just to give you an idea of what the country looks like. This is in the viticultural area. So if you see Chile from east to west, then you see that, well, basically Andes, you know, very, very high mountains, a little bit of Central Valley, and then we go to the coast. So that's just to have an idea of how the country looks like. Now if we analyze it a little bit more, and actually what you see at the bottom of that is the latest division that you can actually write. I mean, besides the appellation, the valley where the grapes are coming from, you can also add now Andes areas if you're located in that area, or between mountains, or coastal area. So that also gives you an idea, because the main thing here is that no matter how long Chile is, you know, there's the concentration of the vineyards is in a specific part of the country, but the biggest influence is when you move east to west, because you're in the Central Valley, and the Central Valley gets warm, it's a Mediterranean climate, but then when you move towards the Andes, it feels more like a cool climate with a big oscillation during the day and the night. And then if you move towards the coast, the closest you get to the ocean, it also gets cooler. So that's like a very, very important difference when you talk about the wines and the kind of grapes you can grow in different areas. So as I was saying, it's a Mediterranean climate where, again, the mountains and the Pacific have a very strong influence. In the Pacific, if we talk about, I'm just gonna keep moving a little bit, because I think this is all more like integrated than just going step by step. But yes, the Pacific, we have the Humboldt Current, which actually flows from the south, from the Antarctica all the way up until Peru. And that's a very cold current, very cold water. And that makes every morning to be very foggy in the coastal area. So then the sky clears around midday, and then in the afternoon it gets sunny, nice, but with a little breeze from the ocean. So that's why we say, we talk about cool climate and all the Sauvignon Blanc and Chardonnay and Pinot Noir are planted in that area or near the ocean. Also, when we talk about the mountains, more than altitude, I mean, altitude is important when we talk about Andes, because as I said, you go high and it gets cooler, and the difference between the day and the night is really, really high. The Andes also, as a mountain, is not that old. It's a little bit young. It's between 25 and 30 million years old. So the soils are very different. Also, they're mostly volcanic soils with different components, depending on where you are. And then also different origins. If you're close to a river, you will have alluvial soils. If not, you might have colluvial soils, or just directly volcanic different origin soils. But as you move towards the west, and we reach the coastal range, which is the other mountain we have that goes north to south, but closer to the coast, it's very different. This is a very old mountain, geologically speaking, so it's about between 300 and 200 million years. So it's lower in terms of altitude, way lower than the Andes. And the soils are mainly granitic. So when you see all the vineyards planted in that area, you see pretty much very red soils with a high content of quartz. There are parts where you find also some schist. So there's a lot of variation. We move north and there's more like limestone, which is very, it's not a lot, it's in a very specific places, but basically, what I want to say is that there's a big diversity in terms of soils and also the climate. Okay, so now moving towards Cabernet Franc, what history tells us, and I want to show you that one, that's a treaty, a winemaking treaty from 1897 by a Chilean winemaker. There are indications that at some point during the 1800s, the Cabernet Franc actually arrived to the country. But we also know that confused with other varieties. So probably there were many blocks that were planted with Cabernet Sauvignon and with Cabernet Franc. So it got really, really confused for a while. We know also that it was extensively planted from Aconcagua to Yumbel, which is kind of a big part of the country between the center to the south. We also have records. We also have records that in 1914, Viña del Carmen de Puente Alto planted Cabernet Franc between 88 and 90, and they vinified it apart, not as a field blend. So, but after that, there are no really more records about Cabernet Franc itself. Today, as it was said before, Cabernet Franc is widely planted across the country, and we'll see some of those wines very soon. Yeah, now we go to numbers for you to have an idea. In terms of this is from 2016, so in terms of the surface planted with vineyards for wine production in hectares, we see how Cabernet Sauvignon, I mean, out of 137,000 hectares planted, Cabernet Sauvignon is number one with 30% of the total, followed by Sauvignon Blanc, Merlot, Chardonnay, Carmenere, others. And in number 12, we find Cabernet Franc with 1,500 hectares planted, which is 1.15% of the total surface, very small. Then, if we just see the red varieties, like the 14 most planted red wine varieties, we see, well, of course, again, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Carmenere, and then in the ninth position, we find our Cabernet Franc. Now, if we go to, if we go to wine as an existence of wine from 2017, from a total existence of like 1 million liters, with appellation, only 870 million liters, from those 80% is red and 19% is white. We see that Cabernet Franc is number 10 after pretty much the same ones, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Pinot, with less than 1% of the total, only 9 million liters, basically. From these, most of them are used in blends. I mean, as Peter mentioned before, there are now Cabernet Franc is having its moment, I think, right? So other wineries are kind of starting to create labels of Cabernet Franc, but still mostly is used for blends, for red blends. A little bit of viticulture. This is, I go back with this, is only to show you that from the vines of Vitis vinifera that were commercialized in Chile between 2013 and 17 in units. So this is what the nurseries are selling. It doesn't count with the cuts that you can get from a vineyard, right? We see that, I'm just gonna talk about 2017 basically, but Cabernet Sauvignon stays the first one. And then we see that Cabernet Franc is on the 10th position again. We'll see pretty soon the evolution of it. I just wanted to mention, like, if you see Merlot, which has a kind of a big increase, that one is basically, it happened because most of the large wineries are trying to replant. So it's not that they are planting more hectares of Merlot, it's just that they want to find more productive clones and produce better quality. We've had a few problems with Merlot and, you know, irrigation and dehydration. So I think they're trying to find better, more suitable clones for Merlot. Now, if we see the evolution, this is the same numbers that I just showed you, but this is in a graph. We see that the evolution of the Vitis vinifera commercialized went down all the way to 2016, and then had a little increase in, more than a little increase in 2017. Here you can see actually the total amount of vines, and also you see at the bottom the Cabernet Franc, I mean, as a proportion of the total, you can probably it's very small. Anyway, so what explains this increase in vines sold to be planted is not, again, as I just said, it's not that they were planting more hectares. So it's more about replanting and changing some of the vines that have been affected with nematodes or any other problems. I would say that from the total vines sold, about 75% are for replant, and 25% for new plantings. Okay, so it's a very, very, very small. Regarding the genetic material that's available in the country, again, there's not much information because they arrived with the French varieties as a mass selection. So today, probably about 40% of what's in production in the country is mass selection, and then 60% is new planted vines. So most of the mass selection today is found in these field blends in very old blocks from the larger wineries, the very old wineries. Then we see entire material that arrived to Chile around the 2000 with two main clones, 214 and 327. Actually, the expression, the phenotypic expression of these two clones is not too different. If you see the cluster size and the yield and harvest dates, but in terms of wine, 214, it expresses a little bit more red fruits like cherries. It's a little bit more floral and delicate in aromas. And the other one, 327, shows more restrained wines, but a little bit more tannic and a little bit more structure as well. Then really quick, just to give you an idea of, I mean, I know we are free of phylloxera, but actually we are planting more and more with using rootstocks. And that's basically because of yields, because of also restrictions of water, high content of nematode in the soils. So we're planting in a more technical way now, and also thinking that maybe in 20 years from now, we can actually have phylloxera in the country. So, I mean, we need to be prepared to face that possibility. There you see the most used rootstocks, and basically they're all related to water availability in the soil and also to resistance on, to nematodes. Okay, so now we go to the fun part, which is tasting. So, well, what I wanted to do is to introduce to you three different wines. They're actually, it's very interesting because they all come from, well, two of them from small, very small producers. One is like a medium-sized producer. But they come from very different areas, and this is why I chose them, because I wanted to show the diversity of it. So, you see, like in terms of the production of each one, well, mine, which is the first, the Pulso, it's, it was basically one barrel that I wanted to rescue. I thought the wine was beautiful. Then we have Tabalí, which has 16,000 barrels of that. And then we finish with Gilmore with 5,000 barrels of this wine. They're very interesting because you see, I'm going to speak about each one to give you an idea of the vinifications. But if you compare the three wines, you'll see how they change in terms of we start with a very delicate, less alcohol wine that shows more the red side of the Cabernet Franc, like very delicate, very the finesse of the variety. And then we kind of start increasing in terms of alcohol also, and so the wines are going to be a little bit heavier, and then we end up with one that actually has some new oak, because the first two don't. So that's going to make a very interesting tasting. So I'm going to start with my wine, and this is Pulso Cabernet Franc 2015. This vineyard is located in Lolol, which is a very, very small vineyard, very small area in Conchagua Valley coast. So we are about 30 kilometers away from the Pacific in a straight line. But we are surrounded by mountains. So that means that we have a breeze all day long coming from the east in the morning and the west in the afternoon. But it's not a cool climate, so it's not enough to actually decrease the temperature a lot. But I find that it gives the wine a great expression in terms of the fruit. So it's very intense. The soils, this is the coastal range, so it's basically granite. It's a granitic soil. Decomposed granite, so that means that there's no, it's not colluvial, so it's just a straight geology that goes fracturing as you go down. So it's really nice because the rock actually fractures, so the roots can penetrate all the way down. We do irrigate though, because as I said before, we have a Mediterranean climate, so all the rainfall is concentrated in winter, so we actually have to irrigate. So that's a kind of a photo of the rocks in the area, so for you to have an idea of what the soil underneath is. And then, well, as a growing season, 2015, it was actually a very, very nice year. The previous winter, we had a little bit more rain than usual, which was great to start the season with a full content of water. And then during summer, we had intense high temperatures during February that kind of rushed a little bit, at least for me, the ripening of the Cabernet Franc. But then actually stabilized, and it was very, very beautiful. Even though I do pick early, I like, in terms of wines, I like to be very pure in my approach, so try to intervene as minimum as possible. That means that I try to find the perfect time before picking the grapes, which means that I don't have to adjust acidity or do anything like that. So this was actually picked in March 24th, which is kind of very early for Cabernet Franc. The good thing is that I get to avoid a little bit the vegetal character of it. And then, in terms of winemaking, this again, this is very pure. I use native yeasts, and this is basically because I want to make the alcoholic fermentation as long as possible. So it kind of goes in a very smooth way. I'm very careful with the extraction. These are all fermented in small vats, and it's, I didn't say that before, but it's hand-picked, and it's sorted before going into the destemmer. It's destemmed, but it's not crushed, because I do want to preserve the fruit. And I also need to be really gentle with the tannin extraction, because I'm thinking of a wine that for me is very important, the finesse of the tannins. So they need to age well also. So you need to have good tannins, good acidity, but at the same time, people are not really aging the wines, you know? So normally they buy, they uncork and they drink it. So you need to find that perfect balance between tannins that, you know, can be drink now or can age well. So I do a couple of punch downs during the day. Not for long, I'm tasting all the time just to be very careful. And then I don't do any cold soak, but I do keep the wine in contact with the skins for about a month. So it's I prefer to have these long maceration periods because I think the extraction is very smooth now that you have alcohol in the wine. And also I really like the way it evolves. So after that, I press and I add immediately or the day after, the best part of the press back into the free run, and then I keep the hard press apart. It doesn't go back to the wine at all. As you can see, the wine is dry. 3.65 is the pH, 5.4 the acidity, and 13.8 the alcohol. So it's a wine, again, it showcases more the red fruit, like red cherries, sour cherries, so graphite. And that's kind of the idea, to have a wine that's delicate, that's elegant. I don't want to overpower it with alcohol or with oak, so this is only in a very old barrel. So I just wanted to show the place, you know, with no more intervention than that. So that was cool. So. Oh, I had a map there, so you could see a little bit of that. That's all the viticultural part of the country. So I don't know if you can see actually, but Santiago would be kind of in the middle, and then down we find Colchagua Valley. So that's where this wine is coming up towards the coast. Just to. Okay, so Santiago, capital, you go down, and this is about 200 kilometers down, and then to the west, Colchagua. So yes, we get there, kind of closer to the, in the middle of the coastal range, and near the Andes. So if you're so kind, Peter, now that you're there, you can show, because then you'll see the same map, but I want to show where the other wines are coming from. So next, yes, we're going to Tabalí, which is Limarí Valley, up there. This is like 400 kilometers north from Santiago, just to have an idea, and also to the coast. And then finally, we have Gilmore, which is Cauquenes, so south. Maule, yes, right there. Right there. Yeah, that area. Okay, thank you so much.
Stay this side. Limarí, Santiago,
yeah.
Colchagua, Maule, and there's Cauquenes.
Yeah. Great, thank you. Okay, so now we go to the next line, which is Tabalí. This is also 2015. But this is a very different area. So as I said, it's 400 kilometers north. And it comes, this is a single vineyard wine. It was planted in 2011, so this is just the second harvest of it. So it's kind of interesting to taste it. This is coming from El Espinal vineyard, which is 24 kilometers from the Pacific. But the main difference here, because I know I said I was like 30 kilometers and it doesn't sound like a big difference, but the thing here is that they don't have as many mountains blocking the pass of the wind from the Pacific as I have. So this is much more like a cool climate compared to where I am located. So they do have the fog in the morning and then the clear skies in the afternoon with a breeze flowing all day long. So There's a kind of a, I would say it's an extreme area to plant Cabernet Franc, but I think it has a really interesting result. The other important thing is that since it's in the northern part of the country, which it's very dry and of course has less rain than the southern part, that means also that they have more sunlight. So the wines, I mean, even though it's cooler climate, so it's gonna take longer to ripe and to get, because they are very focused on getting rid of the vegetal character of the Cabernet Franc. But since they have a lot of light and good temperatures and a good season, like a very long season, because for them it barely rains actually during the year. So they can wait as much as they can, or as they want, in order to pick the grapes. So the other very different thing regarding my wine that I, you saw the rocks and you saw the composition, kind of the soil that was granite. These guys have a, well, that was the El Espinal vineyard. So they have this kind of soil, which is very interesting. They have 20 centimeters of clay, and then it's alluvial soil. So they are located in the fourth terrace at the end of the Limarí River. The end means close to the Pacific, so to the west. It's this alluvial soil with more clay because they are at the end, so it's where the finer, you know, particles arrive. It's a volcanic rock that's rounded by erosion, and they have a calcium carbonate that it's carried from the Andes until the end of the river. So it's kind of tricky because it's not actually the calcareous or the limestone soil. So it has this calcium carbonate component that makes a big difference in terms of the texture of the wine. And the wine itself, because the wine, it feels a little bit more restrained in the nose, but very wide and with very fine tannins in the mouth. Then, just to tell you about the vinification, they ferment with a maximum of 26 Celsius degrees. They do make a cold soak for 8 days at 8 Celsius. They use native yeasts also. They have a total maceration of 20-25 days. I mean, the wine contact with the skins. They go to French oak after that, but they're all older than port use. So it's not going to add anything to the nose and to, you know, cover whatever the expression of the Cabernet Franc in this area is. So I think it's really interesting. Then there is no adjustment of pH or anything. They use the clone 327, and they have a yield of between 1 and 1.2 kilos per vine. Sorry, that was Tabalí. And now we finish with the last wine. Oh, sorry, I didn't show you that. That's all the technical information. If you want to see, like the pH in this case is 3.47, residual sugar 3.8, total acidity 3.53, and that's in sulfuric, of course. And 14.5 alcohol. So as you see, there's already there's a big difference between the first two wines regarding the alcohol and probably the glycerol content. Okay, now we go to the last one. This is Gilmore. So Gilmore is a very small winery. They are a family winery. It's actually the father who bought the property, and now it's his daughter who's the viticulturist and her husband who's the winemaker, Daniela Gilmore and Andres Sanchez. So the total production is about 40,000 bottles as the entire winery. They also produce, and they're very strong in terms of Carignan, Cabernet Sauvignon, and also some red blends. The label, this was in honor of Daniela's father, because he was, as I said, the one that bought the property, and he was the one also planting some new vineyards. So the label represents him, full of dreams and illusions and kind of making the world, because the translation for the name of the wine would be something like the world maker. And then the really interesting thing here is that the first harvest was around 94, but they were actually the first ones to label the wine as Cabernet Franc. So when you talk about Cabernet Franc in Chile, this is a very well-known wine, and a lot of people kind of recognize it. Then this wine is 2014, so now we changed and we moved up from another vintage. For them, it was a warm year, a warm summer that affect very much the vineyard. In this case, these guys are located in Cauquenes, and they are dry farmed, so they don't irrigate, which makes a big difference in terms of a very warm summer. They had to pick earlier than usual. They did around April 2nd. They had really low yields, like 0.8 kilos per vine. So they picked early in order to preserve more the freshness of the wine. So as I said, they're located in Maule. They also have these granitic soils, very red with a lot of content of quartz in it. They're also about 35 kilometers away from the Pacific Ocean, but they are very much surrounded by mountains, so it's a warmer area compared to the two previous wines. The interesting thing about this wine, it's a blend between two blocks. One of the blocks, and which is represents 90% of the wine, it's actually grafted on Pais. So Pais is more than 100-year-old vine that was in that area, used mainly for bulk wine. So they decided to regraft that with Cabernet Franc, and they have 7 hectares of that in a loamy clay soil on slopes, though very gentle slopes. According to them, this part of the wine is a little bit more concentrated, very elegant, with velvety tannins, in a good volume. And then the other 10% comes from another block that's more of it in the flat part, and they planted it in 1997. It was a mass selection, and it's unrooted. So here, there's no grafting, there's nothing like that. So still, these are very poor soils, and they have to add compost and cover crops to incorporate more organic matter. This wine, this 10%, it's more fruity, less intensity, but it's fresher. Now, in terms of vinification, these are hand-picked, very traditional fermentation. They do add yeast in this case. They ferment between 26 and 28 Celsius. No cold maceration, and basically 3 weeks of contact with the skins. Then they go to 20% new French barrels, and the rest is second and third use for 16 months. When the wine is 12 months, they ripe it out and they make the blend, and then they go back to the barrel for the remaining 6 months. It's unfined, very gross filtration, and they keep it in the bottle for 1 year before releasing it. So that was the last wine. I really hope that you enjoyed, because I was really trying hard to make a difference of every kind of wine that we can produce and to show the diversity of the country. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Dracena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube, Facebook, Snapchat, Google, and Periscope as @DracenaWines. I am also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd, or email us at dracenawines.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find us more easily. We are found on all of your favorite aggregators. To subscribe easily to iTunes, go to bit.ly/DracenaPodcast. That's bit.ly/DracenaPodcast, and that's a capital D for Dracena and capital P for podcast. Please check out our award-winning wines and find out about our wine club at DracenaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Sláinte!